Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud is sponsored by the AAIE Institute for International School Leadership. Preparing educators for the unique challenge of international school leadership through online courses led by international school leaders. Learn more at AAIEinstitute.org.
Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. An interview with Karen Kraus, the author of the recent book, Norwich, One Tiny Vermont Town's Secret to Happiness and Excellence. I had the pleasure of reading the book and got excited about it, both as the grandfather of a competitive swimmer and as an educational consultant. And Karen was kind enough to offer to join us here on the podcast. So Karen, good morning and welcome.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be on with you, Steve.
So tell folks a little bit, a quick picture of why this town in Norwich emerged.
So Norwich is a town of 3,000 residents, and it was brought to my attention that it has become a bit of an Olympic pipeline. So when I was given that little tidbit of information, I did some research and found out that sure enough, this town of 3,000 residents has put 11 of its own on U.S. Olympic teams, including two summer Olympians, which is really hard to imagine. And it had put, up until this year, at least one resident on every U.S. winter Olympic team, but one since 1984. Now that number is at two because sadly it did not place anyone on the Pyeongchang Games US team, but still it seemed like this remarkable achievement. So I went to the town thinking, oh, I'm probably going to find some, you know, really super hyper organized sports programs and parents that are all sports all the time. And to my everlasting gratitude, that is the opposite of what I found. I found parents who look at sports as part of a holistic development of their child, that they see sports as something that will get their kids outside in those long winters, that will allow them to develop a relationship with nature, to commune with nature, to make lifelong friends, and most importantly, Steve, develop skills that will carry them through in their adult lives, to develop life skills like delayed gratification, self-discipline, resilience, independence, being coachable, things like that, that are extremely important when you go on to the workaday world, as you and I can attest. So it came this rendezvous that or this reconnaissance mission, if you will, that I made to Norwich came at such a perfect time for me personally, because I found out about Norwich while I was at the Sochi Olympics in 2014. And for so many reasons, I sat there in Sochi feeling as if the Olympic model that had sparked my interest in sports as a child and that I loved dearly was broken, that the Olympics had become this corrupt entity from the top down. The IOC was corrupt in how it chose these countries, and the countries were corrupt in how they won their bids, and everyone had their hands out looking for money, and it was all about money, 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 and greed, 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 and that the purity of purpose about sports, which is the thing that drew me to the Olympics, had been forever lost. And then I find Norwich, where these Olympians, by and by, are so focused on the things that I believe really matter, on self-improvement, on being part of something bigger than yourself, on the communitarian spirit of sport. Sure, it's competitive. And for the moment that you're in the competitive arena, you can really dislike your competitors, but the minute the event is over, you can shake hands and go have dinner with one another and be friends. And what I found in Norwich in the sports were people who were trying to elevate their own performance, but in a very generous way, in which they were lifting everyone else around them. Their performance was being helped by the just having these great performers around them, because these performers not only are trying to improve themselves, they're very generous in helping everyone around them.
So, Karen, I read a comment that you made that you went to Norwich thinking you were writing a sports book, and instead you thought you wrote a handbook for parents.
And exactly.
I'm wondering if you got a thought in your mind. My audience is mostly teachers.
Yes.
So teachers and school administrators reading your book, how do you think they make the translation over to their work?
Well, it's difficult if you don't have everyone on board. And the beauty of Norwich is that the people who live there, they're living there because they've bought into some essential values, that they value the outdoors, they value sports as a day-to-day part of everyone's lives, not just when you're a child, but as an adult. You know, that they want sports to be something that you participate in throughout your life, because they see it. They see the health benefits of it. It's not just the competitive aspect. So for teachers, I would suggest really be clear that you have your value system in place on sports' role in your students' development, and really try to push back on the notion that you're going to run up against and hear all the time that, well, unless Johnny or Jane is really good at something, they shouldn't participate. Really try to encourage sports at every level. Make sure that the physical education program is strong. See if there's a, try to really advocate for recreation leagues in your area, and not only to have recreation leagues, but to make sure they're no cut, so that everyone can participate. Make sure that you really advocate for donors to support financially those children who maybe can't afford the fees for these rec leagues, because that is what's happening organically in Norwich. I've had a lot of people say to me, well, Norwich is one of the more affluent towns in Vermont, so of course they have a really good working model for sports. Well, the affluence really has nothing to do with it, because there are athletes in Norwich who come from disadvantaged homes, but the one piece of it is there are people in the town who have resources, time, expertise, and money that they're willing to share with those that are lacking in those areas.
There's certainly many towns that are affluent where find what you've described.
And that's exactly it. I'm so glad you mentioned that, Steve, because I talked to some social scientists who said, you know, it's really a small miracle that Norwich has maintained these values, because what they have found in the more affluent areas is that as a town grows wealthier, people tend to become more isolated, not more connected. They have the means to send people out to run the errands that they would normally run that could put them into contact with their neighbors. So they're isolated in that respect. As people have the means and the money to give their kids private coaching, send them to academies, what is lost is this large social safety net to the community. So there is no community to pick these kids up when they inevitably fall. There's no community that these kids feel absolutely, positively, unequivocally a part of that has nothing to do with how they perform. It's just, you are part of this community, therefore we support you. They don't have that in the wealthier communities because of the means and methods that these parents use to try to give their children every advantage that money can buy.
Yeah. There was a line that I identified I wanted you to comment on because I thought it connected well for schools. And it's when you were writing about the Ford Serre Memorial Ski Council. And you made this statement. You said, children are encouraged to view success through the prism of progress. To improve was to win. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Exactly. So Ford Serre was a Dartmouth graduate in the 30s, and he came to skiing late. He didn't learn to ski or develop skiing as a habit or a avocation until college. So he was really keen on giving this experience to children so that they could develop a lifelong love of skiing. He also had a more pragmatic reason for doing so. He was at one point the manager of the Hanover Inn, and at the time they were having trouble filling the inn in the winter months. And so by offering this ski program, he thought he could encourage the parents to come bring their kids. The kids would be out of their hair for the day by participating in the ski program, and it was quite successful. So anyway, he was killed in an airplane crash. And so his widow, in lieu of, you know, flowers and other things that people wanted to send to honor this man, she said, would you just send money so we can keep the ski school going? And the wonderful thing about it was, at a time when so many of these activities were still closed to girls, he made this girls and boys equally were given this opportunity. And so as I've outlined the reasons for his wanting to start the school, you can see why excellence was never a piece of it. It was an accident that so many kids came out of this program and went on to participate at a very high level, including the Olympics. He simply wanted people to use skiing as a means of getting outdoors in those awful winter months. He didn't want people to be sedentary because they'd go stir crazy in the long winters of Vermont. He also wanted skiing to become this bond for families. It was something he saw that kids and parents could do together. So he wanted to introduce skiing to kids young so that it was a sport that they could do with their parents all the way through their lives. And also, he wanted people to develop this love of the outdoors and of skiing so that they themselves would participate in skiing all their lives. And then when they had children, introduce the sport to their children. And in that way, the circle would just keep going. The cycle would be developed and go onward and onward. And so that was his motivation, such a purity of purpose. And I remember being in the Dartmouth Special Library, they're looking through archive material on this handwritten letter that Ford Sayre's widow Peggy had sent to a friend in 1971, bemoaning how competitive the Ford Serre program had become, that now they were wearing fancy outfits to meets and the kids were really competing at such a high level. And she reminded this friend in this letter, I really hope the principles of Ford Serre are never lost, that it isn't just about developing the best and the brightest. We want to develop in every child a love of the outdoors and of skiing, no matter the skill level.
So it caught my attention because a lot of schools are focused on research from Carol Dweck about creating a growth mindset in people rather than a fixed mindset. So the growth mindset says I can continually get better, and that's why your line so jumped out at me that success is my improvement, and
right.
I watched that in my daughter in swimming, even at the age of 10. She doesn't have to win the meet to come out of the pool with a big smile if she's taken 2 seconds off her last best time.
Right, because that's the problem. If you look at sports as a zero-sum game, which we increasingly are in this society, there's one winner and everyone else is a loser. And it is also, you can do your best time by 10 seconds and lose the race because someone went faster. So does that make you a loser? I mean, this whole idea that there are winners and losers and there are far fewer winners than losers is so damning to our society as a whole because it's teaching kids at a very young age that unless you are the best at something, don't even bother trying it. And I've talked to so many Olympians who have done they've done these public clinics, and they've told me I really have a hard time getting these kids interested in what I'm saying because I almost have to unbrainwash them. You know, they've been brainwashed to believe, well, I'm not very good at this, so why should I do it? And so these Olympians are telling them, well, for all of these reasons, you'll make friends. If you, as long as you do your best, you're going to feel so good about yourself. It builds your self-confidence. And these young kids have been sold, frankly, a bill of goods that, you know, unless you're the best, just don't even bother, do something else. And it's interesting because in my book, I have a Hannah Carney chapter, and she was the one gold medalist the town has produced. And she participated in the youth, in the rec leagues, in soccer and track. And she said she was so thankful for those no-cut rec leagues because she was a really natural athlete. She would have been a part of any team in any league that she participated in because she just came easy to her. But what these no-cut leagues afforded her was the opportunity to develop friendships with girls that were not very athletically oriented. And they would have been cut from, you know, a team that had rigid standards. And those girls that were not athletically oriented over time became Hannah's best friends to this day. And they were her social safety net. When she would go abroad and be in this bubble of high performance where second is the first loser and she would not win and she would be feeling so horrible about herself, these non-sports friends that she met in the rec leagues would reach out to her and give her the perspective she needed to get over these
So
losses. So that's what I'm talking about, the social safety
picture
net.
that in our high schools where a group of kids enroll in advanced placement courses and end up going through their whole high school career not meeting 90% of the kids who attend their high school.
And it's funny because Hannah told me that there was another something else that was really valuable in that whole setup that a lot of times these kids that weren't the best, they could show the better athletes something just by their work ethic and their enthusiasm. And I think in youth sports, because it's become so results oriented, you see a lot where the winners are the happy people, and you don't see a lot of really excited, happy people among the also rans, right? And so on a day-to-day level, Hannah was able to see these young women who are really struggling, maybe in mastering certain techniques, but they were so joyful and they were so happy to simply be a part of this social group. And that was really valuable for Hannah to see, or for her to see how hard these young women were working to pick up things that she mastered immediately. It taught her empathy. And Steve, how important is that in the development of a child to learn empathy? It's just invaluable. And these are the ways in which it is learned organically.
I was excited reading that because last weekend my granddaughter swam the last meet of the season on Saturday, and then this Saturday she played in the basketball playoff games, and Sunday she started lacrosse practice, and she came home from came home from lacrosse practice with the biggest smile on her face, and so excited to be up and going, you know, that it was that everything was going to continue,
right?
And a different group of friends across all three sports, and exactly. And different kids shining within the sports to learn from.
Exactly. And I think what kids in Norwich learn just by it's not even drummed home in them. They just learn by being a part of this community is that everyone has different gifts. And maybe some people's gifts are not as obvious as others. And maybe some people's gifts won't earn them college scholarships or an Olympic berth, but they're valuable gifts nonetheless, and they're respected and honored. And that's something I hope teachers can take away from this book, that every person, so therefore every child has a gift. Identify that and encourage that child in that gift. I was so fortunate to have teachers from grade school on up through high school who encouraged my writing. They could see that I love to read. And so they encouraged me to write. And Steve, I have found some of my grade school book reports because I'm a pack rat who keeps these things. And my writing is awful. So I have no idea what they were encouraging. But they saw that I loved to read. They encouraged that. They saw that words captivated me. So they encouraged me to write, and look at how it ended up. I can't thank those teachers enough. And so that's what teachers can take away from Norwich, is find something that in the children that you are around that you can tell ignites their passion, and really encourage it. And tell their parents to encourage it, no matter what the outcome is, you know, just at this point, encourage the activity.
Karen, there's one more statement I pulled from your book that I'd like you to respond to. And you made when you were making recommendations to parents, one of the recommendations that I read said, let kids own their activities. Let kids own the activities. Talk a little bit about what you mean by that, because a lot of the work that we're doing in schools today is making schools more student-centered, less teacher-centered. And I really saw a parallel between what you saw happening with the parents and what we're looking at in a school structure.
So I guess from an academic aspect, I'll try to give an example that speaks to that piece of it. So let's say in the first or second grade, there's a kid that seems really good at math. And so the teachers start encouraging that child toward math-related activities. Well, you know, engineering could be really great for you. You could be a scientist, something like that. But maybe at some point, a teacher sees that the child doesn't seem as excited about math anymore. Stop encouraging that. Then have a conversation with the child. You know, you don't seem to be as interested in math as you were. What's going on? Are you bored by it? Is there something else that has captivated you? Because I find it's all so well-intentioned, Steve. We adults have the best intentions for the youngsters in our midst, but sometimes in our enthusiasm, we overwhelm them, you know?
We drive it.
The driving force, right? So in the sports piece of it, I see this all the time where parents let their children do a lot of activities. All of a sudden, a child seems to be really good in one activity. The parent gets super excited about it and learns everything they can about this one activity, starts becoming a mini expert in this one activity. And sometimes the child will look at it and go, wow, this is no longer my activity. My mom or dad seems more into this than I am. And the parent doesn't even see it because the parent is now so invested in that activity. Now, in a more specific sense, I see a lot of teenagers who are in sports because their parents really enjoy their activity. Okay. And so I've talked to so many athletes and I'll ask them, and as I know to ask this because I was a high level athlete myself in swimming. So why are you swimming? Oh, so this is the right answer, you know, the answer that warms my heart, because of the friends that I made, because it teaches me to love it, because I love the self-improvement aspect of it. These are the answers that make me cringe. Well, because my parents really like that I do it, because I'm supposed to get a college scholarship. Those are not the intrinsic motivations that are going to stick.
I'm laughing because 2 weeks ago, my granddaughter had a swim meet and a basketball game scheduled at the same time. And mom knew that she had to let her decide. And I know that she didn't make the decision that mom would have made, but mom let her go ahead with the decision she made. She chose her her basketball game over the swim meet.
That's perfect. And her mom could be an honorary resident of Norwich.
I will tell her, because I already told her I was dropping the book in the mail to her as soon as I finished the conversation with you. So,
yeah, it's hard because we all become invested in the children that we love and we want to see them succeed. Of course we do.
Yeah.
And it is a big world. And I don't want to suggest for a moment that the children of Norwich grow up in a world not where they are not reminded daily that it is very competitive. But I think they also, the other piece of that is that, yes, the world is very competitive, but we also do better together. It can be it's a very communitarian approach to competitiveness.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for taking the time today. And folks, as I close out here, this book is high on my recommended list for you. I think you can tell by listening to Karen that she's a great storyteller, and that does come through in the book. So, besides the powerful message, it contains great stories. Thank you, Karen, and I will continue to be following. I'm glad I get connected on Twitter, so I'll stay on top of where you are and what you're doing.
Me too. Steve, it might be the only thing good about social media is the ability to connect two like minds like ours.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.